Good morning, West Liberty. This is Deuce, and you're listening to WGLZ 91.5 FM. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. Today, I'm joined by Danny Boyd, a West Virginia filmmaker, storyteller, and educator whose work has helped shape how Appalachian stories are told for decades. He's blended creativity with Appalachian community, building a career in a place better known for industry than art through teaching, writing, and independent production. Danny, thank you for being here today.
Glad to be here, Deuce. Happy to help you with your project.
Oh, thank you. All right. So I want to get later on in the interview a little bit into some of your filmography, some of the films you've directed, and into your graphic novels a little bit. But I want to start out a little bit earlier in your career. I know you grew up in West Virginia, which is a part of the country that's much more well-known for industry, more than artistic ventures, storytelling, things of that nature. So I was just wondering, what were the influences and the inspirations that got you into storytelling, filmmaking, and those sorts of things?
Yeah, you got to remember, too, so I'm from Martinsburg. I'm from the Eastern Panhandle. I never saw a piece of coal until my first job in Mingo County. I didn't even know that coal existed. So the only industry that we had was like the fabric, the weaving kind of thing. So, you know, I never thought about industry. I just loved movies. And I don't know how, the only memory that I have of that is my father getting me out of bed. I must have been maybe 5, 6 years old for Chiller Theater to not wake my mother to come out and watch Frankenstein, the 1931 original Frankenstein. And I was hooked at that point. From that point on, it's like, you know, I just loved movies. And every Saturday, my parents would take me to the Apollo Theater downtown in Martinsburg, and I would watch 5 movies. I fell in love with it so much that the projectionist Wally Chandler taught me how to work the projector. But you know, Deuce, I never dreamed that I would create movies or in any kind of mass media. It was just my love of entertainment.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you said you never dreamed that you would end up making movies as a career. So how did you end up in that place where you got to do that?
Well, I was an opportunist, you know, and I told my students for years, I said, you know, just keep your antenna up, pay attention. It's like a famous poet laureate is, pay attention and be astonished and tell about it. So that's kind of what my life was. So I thought my biggest dream would be that I would be a radio DJ. And, you know, I thought that would be my passion, my dream. And then I had my first opportunity and I was horrible at it and I was so embarrassed. So I thought, well, I'm never going to be embarrassed again. I'm going to learn everything I can about this industry. So I went to WVU. And I tried to get in broadcast journalism, but, you know, one little thing is you have to learn to type to be a broadcast journalist, which I never learned. So I was in the communications department and I took a film appreciation class and I thought, well, I like this. This is associated with the kind of things I like to do. And then after I graduated, and then I did an internship at what was WWVU, which is now WMPB-TV, which opened my world, Deuce. I'm telling you, it was like Candyland for me of, being around production. So it led from that to film school in Arkansas where, you know, I applied to 2 schools and only one gave me an assistantship. So I started making movies my first semester in grad school in Arkansas. And 45 plus years later, still creating entertainment.
Nice. That's awesome. So after you graduated from film school in Arkansas, what were those next steps? Because I can see on the timeline from what I was researching, you've got Chillers, the first, from what I could tell, the first film you directed. But what were the steps between graduating and getting to directing a feature film?
I made documentaries for years. For years. Everything happened very quickly for me. I did three PBS type documentaries, and I don't think any of them were very good, but the stories were always good. And that's one thing I want to tell you and your students. It's like, it's all about the stories, man. Just make sure you have good stories. So then I transitioned. I went from there to working at my first job at Southern West Virginia Community College in Williamson. And then I went to Virginia Intermont as my first teaching post. And then I ended up at where I'm at now, where I've retired from, West Virginia State University. And during that time, I started transitioning. Okay, I want to get a narrative film, which I wanted from the beginning, but it was just a stepping stone. And, I did short films and had good luck with that. First two that I made were on, this was the early cable days, a USA Network show called Night Flight. And, from there, it was, I was working, I was cast with, John Sayles' epic movie, Matewan, which was shot in West Virginia. And, I was watching how they made the movie, how they made a feature film, and I thought, well, we can do that. And so it's naivete, dude. Seriously. It's just like, if you think it will come, and that's the only way I can explain it. It came.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. And so then when it did come, your first narrative film was Chillers, correct?
Feature narrative
First feature
film was
narrative
it?
film, yes.
Yeah.
And so that was an anthology of different horror stories and scary stories. What sort of inspired the script for that film?
A couple things. One, I loved horror, and still do. Now it just scares the hell out of me. As you age, you think, oh my God, that stuff's actually scary. So back then, you just didn't really think about that. But it was like, okay, I realized that a couple things. One, I wasn't strong enough screenwriter to write a full 90-plus-minute story arc. And I love these anthology, like the old Hammer horror films of England, where they were, like five stories. So I thought, well, that would work for this. And practically speaking, I only knew five people that shot actual film. Now, my movies were made on film, by the way. There was no digital at the time. So, it was a very complicated, expensive process. So I wrote the script with the five stories and the wraparound so that we could shoot one story a month or 3-day weekend. And that's how I would get all my people together. So we shot over probably 9, 10 months of a total of 18 shooting days, which was, impossible at the time, but we did it. So that's why anthology, and that's why Chillers was my first. And very lucky for me, it was in that world a hit movie. I mean, it's in 30 some countries, and so again, just good luck.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what would you say are some of your biggest lessons from Chillers?
Discipline. It's like, you just, I was always, I won't call, was never, I don't want to call myself a scholar, but man, I studied, I paid attention. I would work on these shoots from out of state, big productions that will come in like commercial shoots and do these crappy little menial jobs just to learn. And, you know, and then I would teach my students of how we would do that. So I'm jumping around just mostly it's about, you know, do your homework, be prepared, and write good stories.
Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned write good stories. I love that. What are some tips maybe you have for how to write a good story?
Well, I can do you a better one. Of course, it doesn't work for radio, but, you know, I taught this for 34 years, screenwriting. But I use the same technique. It's the same technique for writing narrative, for writing film, for writing graphic novels. I can send you like a 4 or 5 page outline that was like a condensed version of my course on how to build stories. But it's, you know, it's the 3-act process. And I don't mean to be short with you, but it's just like, how long is a piece of string? Your program, there's no way we could do it in the length of this program.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. So moving on, the next film I was able to find, online that you directed was Strangest Dreams, Invasion of the Space Preachers.
Mm-hmm.
So that took a step more in a sci-fi direction from horror. What was it like shifting genres like that and stepping into this? Maybe I'm not sure, but maybe a more effects heavy movie, a more, sci-fi heavy film.
Totally FX. Totally. And there was no digital tricks then. That was the very beginning of digital tricks. I mean, it was all pretty mechanical kinds of things. It was, you know, again, I didn't want to do horror, and Strangest Dreams is comedy, by the way, science fiction comedy. And again, it was naivete. It was like, well, we did Chillers and we had really good success with that. So let's do a 28 day shoot. And I'm telling you, a 28 day should have been a 200 day shoot because it was that complicated. It's just, you know, and it was the late 80s and the early 90s when exploitation was successful. And this all happened because of this wonderful window of time of home video. There were only two times in the history of movies that an independent filmmaker outside of L.A. or New York could make international films. It was the drive-in era of the 50s and then home video of the 80s. And I was lucky to hit that wave. And basically, the main movie industry, they were standoffish about home video. So it was like the perfect time for people like me with very, very little money and crazy ass ideas to make movies. So, you know, again, lucky.
Yeah. Would you argue maybe a little bit of that is coming back with streaming, or do you think that's maybe different?
It is, but it, you know, I thought, I joke to my students forever. It's like, you know, the best thing about digital with streaming is that anybody can do it. The bad news is anybody can do it.
Yeah.
The problem is the work has just not gotten better. You think, my God, it's gotten so easy. Put some time into good writing. So again, it's this proliferation of everything and mostly mediocrity. So yeah, I mean, it's up to you. It's up to your generation to create better product.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's great. All right. And then next up in your career, I found Paradise Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that was yet again another shift in genre. From what I found online, it's a story about West Virginians in sort of a trailer park and almost an anthology of their dreams and their aspirations beyond the trailer park. So what was it like switching from horror to sci-fi comedy to almost more of a serious type movie like that?
It was scary. Again, I wanted to make a big shift. I wanted to make a serious movie, or a more serious movie. I mean, you can find Paradise Park on Amazon Prime. It's been restored and it's beautiful there. And it is a bit. It's mostly a fantasy. I mean, it is a very serious story that's fact based in West Virginia in a rural community. But there's much fantasy in it, and it was very risky, obviously, to do a non-exploitation movie like that. But it worked out well. I mean, it's been adapted into a musical, which won Broadway World West Virginia Best Musical, where Larry Gross wrote the music. But it was, I don't know. If you live long enough, I've been in the entertainment business for over 45 years. If you live long enough, your life changes as you age. And I sort of aged through these genres, or my sensitivities about things through that time. But that's probably of my movies, Paradise Park is the one that I love the most.
Yeah, that's awesome. How involved were you in that musical? I did see that when I was doing some research, and I wondered how involved you were with that process for the musical adaptation.
Very involved, because the lead actor, Larry Gross, of Mountain Stage and hit songs and gold albums, he was the star of the 1992 movie Paradise Park. And we just stayed friends through that whole time. And then very weird circumstances, how we ended up being asked to adapt it years later. And the Scott Hill, the director of Theater West Virginia, said, what do you think about adapting this as a musical? And I said, well, I've always loved musicals. I don't like traditional theater, but I love musicals. Same way I love pro wrestling or opera, suspension of disbelief. And he said, do you think Larry Gross would write the songs? And I said, well, I can ask him. And that over a lunch, that's how it happened. And we learned, I got a book on how to write musicals. Now, again, I'd been a screenwriter for years, but I went back to the academic approach and I picked a book and I outlined it. And Larry and I learned together how to write a musical.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, my sister's really big into musical theater. I'm going to have to tell her to go check that out.
Please do. We're going to, yeah. I've written three. I mean, here's the guy that didn't really like theater, and I've written the books for three musicals.
That's awesome. Sort of in the same vein of sort of switching mediums, I want to talk about your graphic novels a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to transition from film into graphic novels?
This is an easy one, Deuce. I had written concepts, scripts, treatments for big movies over the years. And then I realized that I'm never going to have the chutzpah, or I'm never going to have the patience to take 5+ years to get a big movie made. And I was like, you know, I have all these great ideas, or I thought were great ideas. And then I realized, and then a buddy of mine turned me on to graphic novels. Now, I grew up with comic books. I mean, that's how I learned to read. But then when he introduced me to graphic novels, I said, this would work for these big stories, for these movies that I couldn't make. So I started with Chillers because that was a recognizable property that I had. Always with the plan that if I were successful with that, I could go to the big project that I wanted to do, which was Carbon and Soul, which was the huge monster epic environmental story. So I loved doing graphic novels, but my motivation was, this is the way for me to tell stories that I needed to tell. So that's how, and what I did, five of those.
Yeah, that's awesome. So
thank you.
With that original Chillers graphic novel you made, what was it like revisiting one of your older works, one of your older projects with this new medium?
So much fun. And in fact, I think that I'll end up circling back as I end my career with doing something like that again. I wasn't the only writer. I involved four other writers that I loved. Bob Tunnell, a guy from West Virginia, by the way, that we met, we both started with Troma, making movies with Troma. It was the short format. It was like in the movie, you know, with it, but very, very satisfying, very satisfying. And much like, you know, my hero of that whole genre was Rod Serling, Twilight Zone. Frightened but enlightened, and that was always sort of the motivation. And that was the book that I wrote, the show bible that I wrote for the writers was Frightened and Enlightened, and that's what we tried to do. And very satisfying with fantasy or any kind of genre like fantasy, it's much easier to deal with real life in that way. I mean, like the political situation that we're in right now, you're going to run and hide if you hear anything about that. But if you do it in a fantasy form, you know, sort of backdoor it, you can get an audience in from that, or I like to think that we can.
Yeah, that's a really cool way to view it. Yeah, to tell a story but also make a statement and do it through fantasy. I think that's awesome. So then moving on from Chillers, you moved into Carbon, which, as you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. was this idea for sort of this monster, sort of almost mythological project. I did actually get to read the first couple pages of that on the Amazon preview. And yeah, it looks really interesting. What sort of inspired that story?
Well, as I told you, I never saw a piece of coal until I moved to Mingo County. And I thought I knew West Virginia, but I did not know West Virginia when I moved to Mingo County. But the whole idea was, you know, coal is life. Coal is, you know, millions of years of organic material that's compressed. You know, it turns into a form of energy. What if you reverse that process? So the whole idea came from that. And again, my position has always been anti-strip mining, the environmental destruction of it. Now, if you come out and say that, you're going to turn off 50% of everyone at a minimum.
Yeah.
So this was the way to deal with that and the humanity. And again, I like to think, you know, I've often been accused of making fun of the hillbillies. That's their term. Never have I. It's always been, well, you know, of course we're very unusual people and we have our quirks and we have our, you know, weirdosities. But it's always about the goodness of these people, and the true heroes generally are the West Virginians are the heroes. Where are you from, Deuce?
I'm from West Virginia, Wheeling, Northern Panhandle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. I think we played basketball, or State did, with West Liberty. That's who you're with?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, but coal is very big up here. Yeah, there's a lot of talk around coal and energy and that whole industry. So I just thought that was really interesting.
Well, gas, I mean, it's almost the same thing.
Yeah.
That's the horror that you're dealing with.
Yeah, for sure. So you also spent some time teaching storytelling and filmmaking at West Virginia State University. What sort of drove you into that position? What drove that career move?
Well, I loved every minute in the classroom of my 34, 35 years of teaching. I did not like all the other parts. And when absolutely loved the teaching. And again, my students were my colleagues. We learned together through all the genres and things, the creation of all of that. But what a gig to have. I mean, you only work 8 months a year, maybe 3-4 days a week. And then for, you know, 3+ months, you can write movies or make movies and create. So it was the perfect gig on all fronts. But again, first and foremost, I love teaching. And in my mind, I loved every student that I had, of the hundreds, maybe thousands that I had. You know, just really a charmed existence for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so we're getting about to the end of our time here, but I just want to sort of look back and ask, what advice would you have for young storytellers who want to tell stories and maybe grew up in rural or industrial areas like West Virginia? Like, what would be your piece of advice to go and make that dream happen?
Well, again, you hear where I am. I'm, you know what, 2.5 hours from you, and I've been able to do it here. I feel like I can live anywhere in the world, and I have worked around the world. But there are so many stories around us. I think if you just pay attention to what is around you. Now, we tend to block things out that are close to us, and we don't notice things until we come and visit a different area. And then the people who are there don't seem to notice what is around them. So it's basically, you know, again, keep your antennae up and look for what, you know, what's possible. And as, you know, in the beginning of our conversation, we were talking about, you know, digital platforms and all these things that are out there. I mean, there's just about anything can be done, but it all involves good story.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I love that point that, yeah, we block out what's around us because we're like, oh, it's normal, it's average, it's every day, but not for everybody. So that's a great point. All right. Well, Danny, thank you for being here with me today. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Well, you're very welcome, Deuce. And again, I'm serious if this would help you with – what year are you?
I'm currently a sophomore.
Sophomore. Okay, well, you got time. if you email me, I will send you this outline. But seriously, it's shareware. It's free for me. It's just a way, if you need a grid for how to build stories of all the things that we're talking about, not the only way, but a way to approach it, I would be happy to send that. And I'm happy to help students in West Virginia any way I can.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely be reaching out for that. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for listening to WGLZ 91.5 FM, listeners. And now we're going to go ahead and get back to the music.